All right, so today I am joined by casting director Caitlin Well. Caitlin, welcome, and how are you doing?
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. This is my
Pleasure.
first podcast.
Really? Oh, wow, I didn't realize.
I've done interviews before, but my first podcast, and I'm an avid podcast listener, so I'm excited.
Okay, very cool. I would have done more fanfare if I would have known. I would have had like streamers and balloons and stuff. I'll edit that in. I'm going to edit all that stuff in.
Yeah,
Yeah,
you can edit that
absolutely.
out. Just cut to.
Exactly. So I mean, I hate this question, but I do still ask it. It's the how are you doing with everything that's been happening?
Yeah, how are you doing? Wink, wink. Yeah, it's the elephant in the room. I'm good. I'm good. I always say, I can't complain. I'm very grateful, to be working at all. It's obviously been a hard year for everyone. I'm hanging in there, just like everyone else is. But no, I'm a pretty positive person, and I do see the light at the end of the tunnel. Things have definitely been picking up lately. I'm optimistic, and I hope we all maybe did some soul searching and learned some lessons through this crazy, crazy time that was a roller coaster of emotions. But yeah,
It's all
that's where I'm
perspective,
at.
right? It's all perspective, I guess. And just like you say, what can you do? It's sort of like you have to roll with the punches and sort of try and find a way to put out into the world something that's going to be empowering to you and the people in your inner circle. Or you could do the other side too, but we kind of know where that ends up. So, and if I'm getting this wrong and I'm totally off, then just stop me. You were at Warner Brothers. Are you still there, or did you literally move on to your own thing like just before this almost kicked in? Like,
So my timeline, if you will, I was at Warner Brothers for about 4 years in their feature casting department. That was back in, I believe it was like 2011 to maybe 2015, something like that. Then I actually moved to Australia for a year.
I did see something about that. We'll get into that.
So I worked in Australia. I came back, was freelancing, worked with like John Papsidera, and then went out on my own a couple years ago. And I'd been partnered with Jen Presser
Sure.
for a little while, and then at the time, now I'm doing my own thing.
So the go out on your own and doing your own thing, I'm guessing that wasn't too far before COVID hit, or
It was an interesting the way that, obviously I had no idea this global pandemic was coming.
oh, you didn't? We all did. You didn't get the
No.
memo? Everybody knew.
In this weird way, I believe it was 2019 was when I went out on my own. So it was in business for a solid year,
Okay.
a little over a year before the pandemic hit. So it was just enough time to get on my feet a little bit, and at least have dip my toe in the independent waters, and had been networking and had done some really cool projects. Obviously, the pandemic changed the landscape, so things are a little different now. I don't have my amazing office with Stampede in West Hollywood, and like there's things that there were changes that we just all rolled with. I'm still working from home at the moment, like most people. But I felt, again, I keep using the word grateful, but I had more control of my own career as opposed to, some of my friends that, let's say, are still associates and are amazing at what they do, but they were at the mercy of their bosses, and which was a blessing and a curse, because I think they, obviously, if you're working for someone who's always got work, they started back up maybe pretty quickly. But I think even in the scariest of times, I could at least, be networking and hustling and trying to, drum up my own thing, or, attach leads, and, a lot of my movies pushed. But there was at least, I kept busy. Like, again, there was days when I was doing puzzles and, binging anything and everything, but I felt a little more in control. And, luckily we hadn't, just gone out on my own.
Yeah,
That
that was my thing. I wasn't sure with the
would have
timeline if it was like November, December 2019, and you had like 6 weeks or something.
that would have I mean that would have been wild. So
Sure.
luckily it was January 2019, so I had a solid year.
And now you obviously touched on it loosely, obviously, aside from the logistics of working from home, are you sort of slowly feeling like things are picking back up in terms of not just having projects to be busy with, but that they're going to start filming eventually? Like, how is it looking now where we're at?
Yeah. And again, I always say this, but take everything I say with a grain of salt, because I know everyone's experiences are different. But in my world at the moment, it does feel like things are picking up. It feels like, again, movies that pushed are finally getting start dates. And now, you know, when I'm checking actors' availabilities, for a while there, it was just tech avail pending, you know, because nothing was really set. And now, actually, quite a lot of actors are not available because things are shooting again. And so it does feel, again, I wouldn't say we're like back full force. You know, there's still logistics. You know, I have this one movie where, you know, it's shooting in Canada, and so you have to be willing to quarantine. And it's one thing to ask someone to be away from their family for a couple weeks, but it, you know, it's a couple weeks plus a 2-week quarantine. So I'm asking, you know, for an indie budget, I need you to go away for a month. And it's, yeah. So I think everyone's in a different place right now. You know, some people can't wait to get out of the house, and other people are, you know, I think they're a little more hesitant, you know, still understandably, they're being more, cautious or careful about what they're, again, understandably picky. Like, if I'm going to do this, it
sure
it has to be for something that I really am passionate about and I believe in. And so it's still navigating all of that.
Yeah, that's going to linger, right? I think that's going to be around for a little while still, but at least there is momentum with stuff happening. And it's nice to hear that the indie stuff's sort of happening, because I know when I spoke to people around probably peak like July time of last year, anything around indies was just a case of like, just financially, how it's like another 20-30% on their budgets. They don't make money easily anyway. So it's nice to hear that either they're just going ahead blindly or things have changed. Like, I don't know if you can speak to that or if you're able to, but is it that the costs aren't maybe quite as high now because a little bit more calmness and the vaccines are starting to roll out, or is it still a hefty budget addition for them?
I'll be honest, I don't know the ins and outs of the cost of it. I've heard, you know, on huge shows, it can be $2 or $3 million. I mean, it's significant. Whereas some of the movies I work on, that would be the entire budget.
Yeah.
You'd have to double it. So again, I don't know the specifics of that. However, I do know that, again, I'm happy I'm not a producer in this time. I really respect the producers that just jumped in and figured it out. But the sets, at least the ones I've been associated with, have been very safe. And, you know, they just figured it out. They put those protocols into place. And again, it's the Wild West a little bit right now. But at least I know, like, the producers I work with take it very seriously. And again, I can't speak to the budget of the COVID protocols.
Not sure.
But I know they are there.
Yeah, I know it was a big chunk percentage-wise when I spoke to some indie producers last year. So I'd expect it's just a cost that nobody was expecting, and now they've sort of had time to calibrate and go, all right.
Exactly. And again, that's why, in large part, why so many things pushed, because they needed that took a minute to
finish. Yeah, to
all that out. And again, and then sometimes if you needed to shoot at a certain time of year and you lost that window, you know, I lost a lead on one movie, you know, because, again, because you're pushing and things are, so suddenly you're back at square one. And then, you know, other movies, if you've got, you know, a director in Australia, or, you know, trying to get them into the country. And if you have crowd scenes, you know, can you
do them? You do crowd scenes? Yeah, exactly.
And so and seemingly the answer is no on that one. So at least in my experience, I think luckily the movies that were, again, smaller casts, they were able to, there were maybe a lot was shooting outside in the wilderness, things like that.
Or they were able to move along. Was there anything with the scripts that you sort of had worked on that then, as they've gone and sort of had to push and now you're still on the project, have they changed anything in the script? Not just around extras, but it got me thinking around maybe smaller roles or co-stars that could have maybe just been consolidated into one, you know, one role instead of two. Did anything change on that front at all?
I did see a little bit of that. Nothing drastic that, you know, changed the story, but, you know, the first thing that comes into mind is, you know, let's say there was a doctor, that was much older and, you know, we're shooting last fall and
right.
You know, suddenly the doctor's maybe a little younger.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, things like that, or, you know, in a perfect world, maybe you would have flown someone from LA, but, you know, let's actually look for a local hire. So I think that, and I would imagine that the extras changed as well. I wasn't on the ground, but they, sure. I know there was conversations about that.
So that's interesting with the local hire side. Do you feel like, obviously I'm sure you were doing that anyway for particular projects, but did that, it's interesting. Like obviously you have the set location. So you, were you constrained to the locations or did it open you up more because you could access people irrespective of where they were in the world? And then if they were able to travel, great. Like how to play out with what you've done.
And again, I know actors are, oh no, you're going to have all these dings.
That's all right.
again, not the most tech savvy. I know this is probably a somewhat controversial thing to say because actors are, you know, always usually willing to fly themselves anywhere and be local hires anywhere. But for me, I'm open to that, of course, if you're a true local hire and you have somewhere to stay and sure. an address and that kind of thing. But, you know, if I'm paying you scale and schedules are constantly changing, to me, it's risky. I need someone on the ground that if, you know, the dates push or suddenly I need you tomorrow, I don't want to have to worry about, oh, they couldn't get a flight in time. And again, especially with COVID, because you have to get tested so often.
Sure.
But at the same time, if, you know, if someone really wants you, like, we'll make it happen. You know, like if your audition is so good, in some ways, because you're self-taping, even if you're down the street right now. So again, if your tape's amazing and you're the best person for the role, yeah, we'll figure it out and we'll fly you wherever we need you to, as long, you know, assuming there's time and,
sure.
you know, budget and all that. But yes, I think we did. Again, I have a couple projects in my head that I'm sort of thinking about as I'm saying this, but yes, there's, I would usually do a search, you know, everywhere, LA, New York, UK, depending on, again, the circumstances. But then again, there was a leaning into that local talent. And if there was someone amazing there, then that was probably logistically the way to go.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Did you do, so for you, because it's different for everybody, have you done more self-tapes? Have you done sort of the Zoom/virtual auditions more? What's been your approach? And what's, if you have done the virtual stuff, what's your initial interpretation on it for how it resonates for you? That laugh is telling.
So I would say for at the beginning of the pandemic, it was a lot of attaching leads. So I was mostly making offers and things like that. So the tapes weren't as relevant at the time. But then there has been a handful of times during the pandemic where, again, there was one movie where we did have, yeah, we had self-tapes and, you know, we would upload them. And again, that was a situation where it was a lot of local hires. So they probably would have been self-taping anyway. So it wasn't, it didn't necessarily change how we would have done it. My favorite part of the job is being in the room. So I do miss that. I love working with actors and seeing it come to life and giving those redirects. And so I do miss that, if I'm honest. But yeah, we figured it out. I think more recently, again, I've been, you know, in casting over 10 years and I'm now learning some technologies that, you know, I haven't done before or had, you know, I've had a great assistant who was, you know, running point on that. So I've had to jump in and figure some things out myself, which is good. It's so funny. I just, in talking to my friends that are in casting, you know, we, we do compare notes, and you know, they'll tell me, oh, have you done the EcoCast live? Or so you can do these sort of live auditions if you do want to do redirect, things like that. So I haven't done that specifically, but I have done chemistry reads, and you know, I made my poor friends hop on a mock Zoom, you know, last week to make sure that I was recording it correctly. And you know, and it was interesting because it worked one way, but it didn't work this other way. So I was actually really glad that I tested.
Yeah, yeah. There's all these things like, which person are you looking at? Have you got like, which view are you on? Yeah, it's like, it seems like it's just Skype, but actually, and there's all these little nuances that can help you, but also can also, from the actor side as well, you can have a meltdown if you're worried about all these things of what am I thinking about, my performance, or like, am I pinned, or am I muted, or am I looking in the right place, all that stuff.
Yeah. And I quick sort of side funny story, but I was asked to do I'm very happy on my side of the camera letting actors, you know, be on theirs, but I was asked to do a 1 minute promotional video for someone. And it must have taken me 100 tries to, again, my eye line was all wrong. I kept stumbling. I was, again, it was light out when I started. It was dark out and my makeup was just, you know, it was wild.
Was this a self-tape style thing to camera, or was it over like Zoom?
I'm trying to remember how I think I just filmed myself on my iPhone or you know, okay. Something like that. Very fancy. And it was really hard and it was the simplest thing. And so again, I have a true respect for, you know, what I'm putting actors through when they're doing this, cause it's not easy. And it's a whole new, even though, you know, people have been self-taping for years, but now with the Zooms and, you know, do I look at the reader, do I look at, you know, a spot on the wall? Like there's all these questions. And again, every casting director probably has a different preference. You know, I've helped friends self-tape and they've got the, you know, just trying to get the clips and the, mm-hmm. You know, how do you get a full slate without showing your entire apartment? There's a
you
lot.
Don't. You don't. Do you really care about the slate? Let's like get this one out of the bottle now, because sometimes that freaks us out more than anything. And the more I've spoken to people, the more they're like, we don't care, it's just admin.
It's hysterical actually that you say that, because again, I was helping my best friend recently with a self-tape and she was stressing out so much about the slate because she really didn't want to show. She's like, but it looks so bad with, you can see the screen and then the apartment and I don't. And she was like, you know, it was really like sort of getting in her head, and we tried it like 5 different ways with the pan up and then this, and you know, and again, I am a casting director, and I said to her, I never even asked for them. I don't, unless it's maybe a kid that I need to know, you know, your height and where you're based or something like that. I rarely ask for them again, unless the studio or the network has requested it. You know, and I know when, on your end, when you get the directions and it says, oh, I got to do a slate. And then it says, I need to zoom out at the end. And but the reality is I've gotten all different kinds of slates. Again, I personally don't love them. If you have to do it, I just like it at the end. I personally don't mind if your apartment, if it's, you know, I like, if I need something very specific, I will ask for it. Sure. But otherwise it's ridiculous.
It's, I guess, just to get a bit of a feel for what you look like outside of the sort of mid shot, and I guess just those basics of height, age. Well, you can't ask age, but height, height. That's about it, really. Height and agent and name, I guess, and
where you're, you know,
where you're based. Yeah,
yeah, things like that. But again, also that can all be. If I really need to know, I can track your agent down and
sure. Find out. But yeah, it is something that when it doesn't come along as often now, but when it does, it still is just when it, that's no, not an ident, no.
And then again, when you're filming on your iPhone and you're trying to zoom, but you're locked into this, there's the ring light. It's
yeah.
the whole thing.
I had, I think it was about it. Well, end of the summer, I spoke to Cara, shoot Rosenbaum, and she said the same thing with the idents, where sometimes people were sending them, but they spent so much time on them. And then sometimes they were really creepy, like slow pans that they were doing. And it was like a really creepy sort of like, just not, just forget it. It's admin. Focus on the performance. Don't worry about the edit. Which
you will never not get the job because you didn't, you know, do the slate correctly. Or, you know, again, if it's really important, we'll.
I think that's the soundbite to the whole bit that we've just spoken about. That right there. We're never not going to get the job if the idents.
Yeah.
Garbage. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's all about the performance. Like who.
Exactly. Amazing. I guess from a self-tape side, just generally, which is obviously more with what you do, we can get into the nitty-gritty of that a little bit. We don't have to talk too much about the technical stuff because people can Google that. Like there's a lot of info out there. What I'm curious to talk about is your approach on how to guide and direct actors just generally in that process when you're not, to your point, in the room with them and you can direct them in the room then and there, because it's a different thing. And we've done self-tapes for a while. We kind of know how to deal with it, but it's still good to hear from someone else's point of view as to how should we approach that? You know, you gave your example of you doing that thing to Cameron. It took hundreds of times. We've all done that where we get like a zillion takes. Which one do you use? How do you trust it? Can you speak to that a little bit and I guess help actors with how they can empower themselves when they're in their lonesome doing it? And then what you like to do to get involved in that process, if at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a couple different answers to this. My sort of initial go-to response is that the pros and cons of self-taping. Again, you can do it 100 times. I'll never know because I'm just seeing the final, you know, product that you send me. And so I think that can work to your advantage in that you are, as the actor, I'm seeing what you want me to see. You know, so let's say the first couple you just needed a warm up, or as you were doing it over and over, you found something that you hadn't found before. And so it's, again, I think that works to your advantage in some ways, that it's you feel good about it by the time you hit send to your agent. Whereas if you come into the room, again, depending on the role and the project and the day, you might just get one take. You know, like you might come in and let's say you just, again, the nerves got the best of you, or you forgot a line, whatever it was, and you leave feeling like, I know I could have done that better. So there, you do run that risk of, you know, it's a little more out of your control when you're in the room. But obviously there's also that magnetism and that just that, again, the human connection where that you don't get over Zoom. Sure. So pros and cons to both. So that said, I think what I do miss giving the redirects, because I think sometimes when I have actors tape, they're great actors and they give a great performance. I just know that my team is maybe looking for, they're leaning more comedic, or they're leaning, there's something there's tonally that they're looking for that I'm not getting, that the actor wouldn't have necessarily known. Mm-hmm. And so, but then again, we've talked about how, you know, it takes to do a self-tape. It's not, you know, some people have a like great, easy setup ready to go, and other people it take, you know, you have to, it's a whole set it up, and it takes,
find a reader, all this stuff that's not performance based. Sure.
Yeah. And so, and again, and I know that can be stressful. And so I've struggled with this recently, is if I know it's a good performance and the actor could easily take a note, do I ask them to retape mm-hmm. or not? And I think, because again, if I ask them to retape, it's, I know I'm asking them to, you know, it's a lot more time and energy. So, you know, and are they going to get it at the end of the day? You know, we have a couple other top choices. So it's this kind of.
I would assume though, Kaylin, you'd only ask them to retape if you genuinely felt like they were someone who could be that potential person to be cast if they hit that note.
Yes. And I think that's where I'm at. You know, if we boil this conversation sure. down, is that if I really believe in someone and I think that they have a great shot if they just make this one little adjustment, then yes, absolutely, I will have them do that. But there's been plenty of times where there was like great actors that I know it was a great read, but it wasn't quite what we were looking for. And so, yeah, I don't want to say I'm kicking myself, but I think those are the moments that I wish that even if I was just on a Zoom with them, you know,
you just, could just redirect them there and just see if they can hit it.
I know we could have gotten there. And again, it's one thing to say to my team, I know they can do it.
No. Yeah. Proof's in the pudding, right? Like they want
to
see.
And that's my job is to vouch for actors, which I do often. But yeah, like if I'm going to put someone through that, I want to make sure that they have a really solid chance of getting it so that I'm not just
sure.
I don't want to waste anyone's time ever, of course.
Now for that, from the actor side, like anyone watching or tuning in listening to that, they might go, well, hold on, because I could do something really amazing and it's my interpretation, and then I just don't know, and like I've not had a chance to show that I could do the other thing, and maybe I can, maybe I can't, who knows, but it's that thing of, but I didn't know. So I'm going to speculate and assume that obviously as much info as possible is shared up front, no doubt. But if that kind of note, or like, you know, they want, say, dark comedic, and that's something you find out after the event, because I'm sure many times producers will watch it and realize halfway through that actually we want it to be more like this. How should actors approach that, knowing that they may only get one go? They may never. I mean, this is more mindset kind of question where I'm veering into. Yeah. It's not a, what can you do as a casting person? Like, no, get it. Like, it is what it is. But how can actors approach that from a more healthy mindset perspective, in your opinion, just so we don't lose our shit in the long run, and you know, come back next time and just again be like, all right, I'm gonna take my interpretation, give it everything, and see what happens.
My honest answer is to, well, at the end of the day, you got to just make it your own and make a choice and be confident about it. And I think that will go a long way, even more so than you think it does. Because again, I've gotten plenty of great reads that these actors aren't going to get the part, but I will bring them back over and over and over again, because I know that they did a great job. And I get that it's frustrating on your end because you don't know that you did a great job because you're not necessarily getting that feedback.
Well, that's the mindset thing, right? Like, so at what point do we need the external feedback loop? And at what point is our own inner compass of knowing enough to just be like, I'm happy?
Yeah. You know, for example, I had a role recently where I had a young actress who I do know on a personal level as well. Mm-hmm. She taped for something and she got really close. Like, she was, I would say, the runner up, and for a variety of political reasons and, you know, all kinds of things, it went to another actress. This, you know, the actress that I'm close with didn't know, like, she didn't even know that she had gotten sort of that far. It wasn't a situation where, you know, I pinned her or this or that, because I wasn't sure what next steps would be. Maybe she would chem read, maybe she wouldn't. But again, she knows nothing about this going on in the background. So I reached out to her team and I said, hey, I just want you to know how great it was and how close she got. I know that almost, again, I don't know if that's better or worse when you find out that, you know, you got close. But anyway, so she reached out to me directly and said, she said, so many times you just never know. Sure. You just don't hear anything. And so she said, I really, really appreciate the feedback. And I basically said to her, look, your read was amazing. It was things out of your control as to why you didn't get it. And so just keep doing what you're doing and you will book something big. And again, I don't normally get to have that sure. interaction. Like, this was a special case because I did, you know, I know her. Sure. But, you know, so we try to do our best. But the reality is we're sometimes you're busy, and when you're in the thick of it,
you couldn't reply to everybody, right? I mean, how many submissions would you get? Or no, not subs, but like, how many people would you call on average for a role? I know that's a very broad question because it depends on the role and the project, but.
And that's the thing. It can be, you know, we're sifting through, I would say, easily thousands of submissions. Of those thousands of submissions, again, depending on the project, it can, you know, probably hundreds of people are considered or put on a list. And then, you know, maybe, again, I'm making this up, but let's say 30 to 50 read, or, you know,
And but then that's per role, right? So then you extrapolate that out and it's like, where's the time coming from for you to reply to everybody? We get it. Well, some of us get it.
Exactly. And here's the thing, again, if I love what you did, I will go out of my way to tell your agent. But sometimes, again, things are constantly changing. You know, one minute you're on the short list and then the next minute you're not. And it's this, you know, sort of, again, fluid situation. I've completely gone on a tangent. I feel like, and lost the original question.
I'm going back. What was the original question? I forgot too. It's fine, but it's all good. It's all good material.
I do this when I'm talking to my friends. So,
well, that's a good sign. That means that we're just having a laid back conversation.
Yep,
no formal nonsense. No, I think it was that sort of mindset thing, right? Like how as an actor can we sort of be comfortable in that space of not dwelling on, like you say, all these external factors and this moving puzzle that you guys have to work with, and still be okay with just what we're doing. And I don't know if there is a nature nurture argument to that, or if it's just the terrible line of, it's just experience. Like, I don't know, but maybe you have some insights or tips on that beyond my naive level of feedback for people.
You know, yeah, I think I started this by saying, you know, yeah, you just gotta, it's like having that confidence in yourself and just putting yourself out there over and over again, making choices, not overthinking it. You know, I think not doing what you think we want you to do and just, mm-hmm. you know, doing what feels right and following your instincts. Sorry. And I think you had asked, I remember now.
I'm glad someone does.
It was the question of, again, let's say I use the example of my team leaning more comedic. I think you were asking, do I give that note to the actors?
Yes.
So here's what I'll say about that. If, you know, you never know if you're the first self-tape or the 100th self-tape. And so when we're first starting out, sometimes we don't know what we want necessarily. You know, we might have an idea in our heads, but I often don't give notes, especially in the beginning, because I truly want actors to make it their own. I don't want to cloud their creative process, because that's, I think, sometimes when the magic happens and things that I didn't know that I wanted that, or, you know, some really interesting things happen and suddenly I'm like, wow, that's genius. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's why you guys do what you do. And so I sort of purposely don't give notes a lot of the time when it comes to things like that. I will say after, you know, let's say we've gotten, you know, a handful of self-tapes, you know, we're now on the second or third round, we do start to see patterns. I do start to see, again, what my director is responding to. Mm-hmm. But it can go, that can have the adverse effect as well. You know, I had a situation recently where I did give a note of, you know, some more backstory on the character and, you know, asking the actors to sort of mind the comedy in these moments and, you know, feel free to improv or do this or this. And I think the actors took the note too far. It was no fault of their own. But I think the way that this little blurb I sent was written, it turned into this almost like broad comedy where that's not the tone of the movie, but I don't blame them. It was a completely understandable choice that they made, but it almost hurt.
Sure. Yeah.
Hurt the performance by giving this note. So I tend to be very careful about, you know, what I say. Again, if it's really important, I will obviously give a note, but I think sometimes less is more.
I mean, it's such a malleable process anyway, that everything that we're like, you know, even by the time you've done the audition, you end up getting the job and you're on set, it you know, changes and morphs into something else when you're actually there with the other actors, and maybe the director's shifting the idea of what he wants by, you know, by then. So it's, I guess, just rolling with those punches. For you, something kind of light bulb from when you were talking about sort of the roles and when you were looking at, you know, bringing people in. How do you approach that? I know, again, it'll vary, but do you, like, early on after reading the script and doing your breakdowns, do you find that you intuitively start to get visions of what you think the character might look or feel like? Obviously, it's influenced by what you talk to with the director about, but I'd be super intrigued to learn a little bit about your process. And if it's instinctual, is it visual, guttural? Like, what does that look like for you at the beginning? So you have something to almost try to manifest, I guess, in the long run with the actual person that comes through.
Well, you know, and I think this is sort of the fun, creative part of the job and, mm-hmm. you know, in part why I love what I do. You know, you read a script and I think there is, yeah, like some, you do have this vision in your head. Sometimes it's a specific person. Sometimes it's just a vibe or, an overall sense. And then you talk to your, you know, you talk to the director and the producers and they might have it. Sometimes you're on the same page, sometimes you're not. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, it is a very collaborative process. And, you know, sometimes I may see it one way. And so I'll try it a certain way. But then they see it a completely different. And so I'll try that too. And I think once you start, that's why I love, again, reading actors and seeing it come to life because, you know, sure, there's amazing actors that, you know, I understand why they're offer only. And, you know, so if you want them, you have to go get them. But again, my favorite part of the job is the audition process because you see, again, sometimes things you just didn't expect happen. And I think that like someone can be a great actor, but it's just not how you pictured the role. And then they do something with it that just turns it on its head and suddenly you can't unsee it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that is now the role. And then everyone else is trying to live up to, again, unbeknownst to them, this bar that has been set by someone who just, again, made it their own, made a choice. And again, but then you got the financiers going, oh, but I need a name. And so it's this juggling act of finding the best person for the part, but also, you know, it's, I call them the puzzle pieces and making sure, okay, now I've just attached my lead. This actor did a great read, but do they match? You know, does it, is this the right tone? Is this the right vibe? Is this,
sure. Could they be related? Is it the right connection, like chemistry wise, all that stuff?
Yeah. Do they belong in this world? Will it take you out of it if you cast, you know, so-and-so? And so there's so many things at play. And that's why, you know, some roles you know right away. And, you know, if you're lucky enough that the person says yes and they want to do it, again, that's rare. oftentimes it's, you know, there's quite a few passes and there's, you know, the person you want is not available. Sure. But then again, I always, you know, believe that the right actor ends up on set on the day. And, sometimes it takes longer to get there than others. because again, sometimes you have, again, great reads, but, and sometimes it's the writing, you know, you could have this, you know, not, and I don't mean to blame sometimes the sides we pick, for example.
Sure.
It's just sometimes everyone does a great job with it. And other times it's sort of like, it's just not landing that thing that you need. And so again, then it's, you know, you have to pivot and adjust and work with, again, maybe you saw it one way, but you need to kind of rethink everything, you know, you had. Like, I think if actors saw these lists and they saw, you'd think that it's like one type on a list. No, it is sometimes the age, there's 20 year age differences on the same list and different, again, just, you know, just completely different styles because sometimes we don't know what version of the movie we want to see. And it's this ongoing conversation that we're having.
And I guess, like you said before, it's sort of which domino is being attached already that then sort of closes off a little bit of that sphere, but still means you have to focus on. Yeah, I don't envy that part of the process for you because that just sounds like it's where a lot of the time is spent on trying to do that math in your head around how does it all correlate together. And then the financier side on the indie side, I guess, is just another thing to be worried about in terms of how does it make bank, which I get, I totally get. But
yeah, and there's a lot of, I think, again, the pro to working in the indie world is that there are less cooks in the kitchen and less approval process. You know, the director and producer say yes, and great, I get to hire the person I want to hire.
And I guess compared to, say, like when you were doing stuff at Warner, you probably have your hands in the dirt a bit more with the creative side, and you're closer to the decision makers to really have that stronger voice with that creative aspect.
It's, you know, on the studio side, there is a lot of overseeing. But again, the approval process is, you know, even you've got, because you've likely got, you know, the casting director that's in the trenches working with the director. Then you've got the studio, you know, so in the casting at the studio sort of overseeing that. Then you've got the executives. Then you've got, you know, and there was a lot of times where the producer, like a lot had gone into, you know, we picked our, let's say, top three, and we were presenting them for approval. And then the head of the studio said, nah, I don't like those. And so you were back at square one. So it's not as, you know, simple as, oh, sure, you gave a great read, the end, you get the role. Like there's so many steps, again, depending on, you know, especially, you know, if there's a studio and a network, and, you know, there's a lot of,
that just sounds like it really slows down the process for you. Is it a lot slower with that? And then I guess like spurts of just having to go real quick, or?
Casting in general is very go, 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 stop. It's like, there's a lot of,
that should be a t-shirt.
It's seriously though, it's, I learned that early on. Luckily I've, you know, you'd think I'd be used to it after like 12 years, but it is very, one day it's an emergency and it's,
right,
you know, I need this one role cast yesterday, and then, you know, you get the offer out, and then it's a little bit of like sit and wait. So it just depends. I think some, you know, some projects are, you know, especially, you know, if you're doing like a pilot or something, it's pretty go, go, go from from the
beginning to end. I mean, and we kind of know that. We know that many casting offices, when they're busy on like big projects, it's like that's your life, is that for pretty much that window of time. For you just individually, how have you found over the 12 years a way to sort of balance that so that you don't, I guess, burn out, go nuts, have some kind of life balance, you know, all that actually important stuff? How's that been for you as a journey, and was it sort of a bit of an evolution?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Work-life balance is very important to me, especially, I believe I mentioned at the beginning that I lived in Australia for a year.
Yeah.
And they've got it right. The rest of the world has the work-life balance down, which I've sort of adopted that philosophy. Not to say that I don't work hard, but it's
work smart.
That's Americans in general, and especially in LA, like it can be cutthroat because it is such a, you know, it's a competitive business. But I would say this to actors, I would say this to my friends, I think you're better at your job if you are truly happy in your own, you know, life. So I do think it's, you know, especially, you know, in the days we live in now, it's important to make sure you take time to go for a walk, or, you know, to do the little things that, because otherwise you will go crazy and burn out. I think for me, casting, each project is different. So I think that's what keeps me on my toes. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, normally you're on a project for 8 to 10 weeks. Sometimes in the indie world, it can be 2 years. So it just depends. But it's, yeah, there's always, you know, that if it's crazy, it will let up usually, you know, at some point. I think some studio execs might disagree with me on that. You know, when they've got 40 projects that they're overseeing, sometimes it's, yeah, they're like, what are you talking
about?
But
we're talking a different kind of animal in some way, because I guess as an independent freelance casting person, it's not quite the same, even though you're doing the same sort of thing. I'm again assuming that working within a studio system, it's more of a traditional just job, where like there's always more.
Yeah, and it's funny. There's, you know, I hope my old bosses don't listen to this, but there was times at the studio where it actually can be boring, you know, right. Because you're sort of, you're doing the same, you know, I think after a while, if you're, you know, you, it is a lot of the, you're not in the trenches, which I think is in part what I missed. You know, again, I love being in the room, and when you're at the studio, it's, I've said this many times now, but it's a lot of overseeing. Sure. And so
it's just, admin, you know, kind of stuff.
It can be admin, more lists, you know, checking avails, like that kind of thing. And so I think in the freelance world, you have to arguably hustle more, but the payoff is then more. So it's just a whole other beast.
Sure.
And so it's very, I always tell actors, like, I'm in the same boat, you know, I'm freelancing too. Like, I can work really hard at this one job, but I simultaneously need to be working on the next job, you know, making sure.
I think we kind of know that more now after the last year to 18 months, to be fair. I think we're like, oh, we get, okay. Yeah. They actually, it's just the same. We get it. We empathize with that. So the Australia thing then, was that related to casting, or do you just like get out of Dodge for a year and do something totally different?
I fell in love with an Australian guy. So I did long distance for a couple of years, and then thought, you know, we're going to do this. We should do it. And so, yeah, so long story short, so I did move there, and it obviously didn't work out. I'm back in Los Angeles. Sure. But I have such a soft spot for Australia. It's still a big part of my life. It was I no regrets. It was one of those things. I got to still work in casting there. I worked with Thea McLeod, who was
amazing. That was going
to
be my question. So you were still working in the industry there.
I did. You know, I thought, you know, here's my chance to, you know, some days you have a love-hate relationship with the industry and the bureaucracy and the politics of it. And I thought, well, you know, this is my chance to get out and do something new. And casting just kept finding me. But I think it actually renewed my love for the job, because again, working at a studio like Warner Brothers, it was a dream job. It was so cushy in a lot of ways, and there's nothing like going to the lot every day. It sure. really was amazing. Like, it was amazing and a dream job in so many ways. But then, again, I think sort of stepping away from that, it is at that level, it's very much, oh, do you want Leonardo DiCaprio or Robert Downey Jr.? You know, it's this. Whereas when I'm in Australia working on Neighbors, if you give, you know, some actor who's their first job, like you feel like this sounds cliche, but like, you know, changing someone's life.
And yeah, no, for them, it's like they won the lotto.
Something. Like giving them a break. And I think that like feeling like I was making a difference, mm-hmm. and again, you're seeing that reward a little quicker. And so in that sense, I think it was more fulfilling. And you know, just again, sort of, I think renewed my love for the job. So that was, again, definitely
important, right? Because you might not be doing what you're doing now if you hadn't had that. I mean, who knows, right? It's all hindsight. But was there any differences that you found between, I mean, I guess you sort of, Warner Brothers is going to be different to just doing what you're doing even now, but were there any differences market-wise that were very glaring, aside from nuanced little things? Were there obvious distinctions you found?
You know, the nuanced little things were like comical in that, you know, they have like different little words, you know, like okay. Highlighter is called something else, you know, like.
Sure. That's the same in the UK where, there's small things. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's these little, you know, little differences. But no, the overall stuff. I knew more actors than I thought I would going into that market. I remember being scared that I wouldn't know, you know, so many, and I might not know some of the, like the TV stars there, if you will, that maybe haven't crossed over here. Sure. But there was a lot of, I knew a lot more actors than I expected to. And the ones I didn't know, I learned very quickly, because even though, you know, I was in Melbourne, and even though it's a big city, it's actually almost feels like a small town. You know, I always say we'd read an actor on, you know, like a Tuesday, they might even come in twice that week if we were working on a couple projects, and then you'd see them at the theater on Friday. And so you got to
know, like a small sort of tight knit community. And
yeah, a very tight knit community. Everyone knows everyone a little bit. And so I feel like I learned a lot of the local talent pretty quickly. And then, you know, luckily I've been able to bring it back, you know, and still use that, you know, today. Like there is, again, luckily we live in a world where, you know, you can be bicoastal, bicontinental, you know, it's, you know, again,
with Zoom, you can be anywhere. I mean, I'm looking out my window. I'm in England. It's raining, of course. don't you dare tell me what the weather's like there. I already know. I can imagine. Yeah. Don't, Caleb.
I'll just nod.
But you know, that's the world we're in. Like everything is just, you know, and like this morning I was talking to one of my best friends. He lives in Goa. So all of a sudden I've gone round the world technically in the space of, you know, 12 hours. And it's bittersweet. It's really cool, but it's also like, but I would kind of prefer to just be there in person.
Yeah, there is nothing like, you know, yeah, that energy of being together. But again, I'm very thankful for this technology, and it's allowed me. So even when I moved back to the States, I could still teach classes in Australia. You know, I was just hopping on a Skype and teaching classes, and I've been doing that for years now.
Amazing.
So that's special. And again, sorry, just to finish my thought from before, because of course I've gone on a tangent. It really is similar. When you boil it down, it is a similar, again, process, similar. It's just, I think everything in, at least here in America, it's just on a bigger scale.
Sure.
You know, like the budgets are just bigger, you know, like a $7 million movie there is like a huge budget. So it's just a different scale, but the rest of it's on the
mechanics are the same. Yeah,
exactly.
Because this comes up obviously quite often with actors that aren't American or Canadian, and they want to move out to the States, when assuming that's allowed and the world's open and free. Do you have any recommendations you normally give them, say to the classes that you teach back in Australia? You know, is it things like have a really good American accent down, obviously have the paperwork? Are there any other things that you strongly advise them to do before they decide to make a leap to a new market like LA or New York?
You know, like you said, I think the obvious things like the accent, the paperwork is quite a big hurdle. I have a whole new sympathy for visas, having had to deal with that myself. It's a part when I'm back. That's a beast. Aside from that, again, I sort of touched on this before, but I'm a firm believer in being where you're happy. And so, for example, like if you come to LA and you don't like LA, like that's okay. Like I don't, because I do think that will show in your work. You know, mm-hmm. if you're living somewhere that's just not in line with who you are, again, you can, again, in the world we live in, you know, yes, sometimes for smaller roles, if I'm casting something on a Friday and I need someone to work next week, yes, I need them to be here on the ground. You could work in Vancouver. You could work in, you know, Atlanta. Like there's things are shooting everywhere. Maybe not.
They will be shooting everywhere.
I really, again, I'm a firm believer in just living where you are your best self. And I think obviously an actor, there has to be some flexibility and, you know, just being open. You know, a lot of the successful actors I've seen are, they're truly nomads, and they are, I'm a homebody. I can be a creature of habit. I couldn't do what you guys do in terms of just dropping everything and, you know, going God knows where for God knows how long.
Yeah. I read I think it was an article, with Kevin Bacon being interviewed, and he literally said him and his wife always have a suitcase that's just unpacked, because they're pretty much within a few weeks probably out the door somewhere else for a week or two, then back. And it's never really filming in LA that often. It's more just that's where it's maybe produced out of, but then you're kind of, I'm going here, I'm going there, going overseas. And so I think it's really nice and refreshing to hear you, you know, talk about be where you're happy, have that base where you feel like you're content, and just have the ability to go to those places when needed. And okay, sure, the smaller co-stars, yes, you'd have to be there in person, that makes sense, but outside of that, you know, yeah, I think it's more important to be in a healthy headspace to then be able to come to the work in a way that you feel empowered, as opposed to I'm on the hamster wheel chasing this pipe dream and I'm miserable and I can't pay the rent and all that nonsense.
No, I think we can sense that sometimes, you know, in the room, like if there's like a certain
desperation kind of seeps pretty
yeah, like prepared. I hate to say the desperation, but you can sometimes tell the energy is, I have to get this job. You know, this is the first audition I've had in a year. I have to get it. And it's usually the actors that, if you can get to that, and again, easier said than done, but if you can get to that place where you come in, you do your thing, you walk away from it, we're like, oh, that was brilliant. Like there's just something, it's always, you always book the ones you don't think you're going to book.
Sure.
Because there is something to be said about just throwing it away, letting it go. You've got 5 auditions that day. And, you know, so you do the work, you're prepared, but it's not the be all end all, you know, and I think it's hard to get there, but.
I guess the only way to cultivate it is having stuff outside of acting so that, you know, after those 1 audition in a year or 5 in a day, you still are like, well, but I'm going to go home and I've got whatever, the side hustle, I've got a wife, or I've got kids, or I've got something else that helped bring in money, which isn't taboo anymore, although it was 5-6 years ago. And, you know, having a rounded life that lets you feel like, okay, if I don't book that, I've got my theater group that I go and do stuff with. We put on our own projects, and all that makes you feel like you're involved.
Yeah. And my favorite thing about, you know, I do a lot of generals with actors, and the best generals are when you just get to know someone, and, you know, at the end of it, you're like, God, I don't want to get a drink with that person. You know, it's that you're not sitting there. Cause I always say, I can look at your resume, I can look at your reel and all that stuff. I want to know, yeah, like, where'd you grow up? Like, what sports did you play? You know, like, if we can connect on a human level, those are the generals that I remember. You know, I don't remember the ones where someone comes in and says, well, here's where I am in my career, and this is where I'd like to be, and I want to do, you know, and like, of course, they got, you know, I'll ask questions about, you know, we can talk about acting, but I've had generals where, you know, let's say someone was on a show that hadn't even come out yet, so I'd never even seen them act, but they came in, and they were so charismatic, and we just had such a great conversation about life that they left, and I was like, that person's a great actor. Again, had never seen them act, you can just tell. And like, again, that's happened many times, but someone in particular I'm thinking of, and, you know, was able to book him in a huge lead in a movie like a couple of years later. Cause it turned out he could act. But again, you could just tell from this interaction. And so I always say, again, if you just have interest, like, of course we all love film. We all love, you know, but I'd much rather.
Yeah. Some of us. Like,
I'd much rather learn about, yeah, what makes you unique and
who's the person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we kind of think it's job interview, or that's what we've been taught to think. So you kind of go in thinking, I've got to prove my resume and go through my history of work and where I studied, and, you know, you guys can read.
But to be fair, I think there are, you know, to be careful how I phrase this, I think there are some of the old school casting director, again, who I think they did, they paved the way, and I have nothing but respect. But I have heard stories about, you know, they, you know, someone comes in and they're looking at your resume, and, you know, and they're, oh, so you've done, you know, and they're literally going through, you know, and I've been in situations like that where someone was like, you're almost getting quizzed, like, what's your favorite show on the air now? And you're like, what? You know, so it is, again, being prepared and having that flexibility to be off the cuff. But personally, for me, it's all about, yeah, just that genuine connection.
Yeah, I get that vibe, I think. also, I feel like the sort of younger generation that's coming through and now kind of sort of taking the reins slowly, naturally is going to have a different outlook and mindset just on life. And then that just filters through into the work. And that's, I think, why we're seeing some of the shifts and changes we are seeing across all kinds of things, whether it's matters of representation or just the stories we tell, and the openness to have conversations, even just like this, where for actors, you know, who want to maybe listen in, all of a sudden it feels like they don't know you, but they have a bit more of an idea of you than if they just were doing a self-tape for a casting director who they could see on IMDb, where that's all they know of you. And that, I think, makes it a bit more of a reassuring playing field for everybody.
Yeah, it feels a little more accessible. Sure. You know, I we're all on the same team. You know, I think at the end of the day, we all want to make great content, and we want to work together. And, you know, it shouldn't be, again, like you said, like this scary job interview type situation.
It's the whole gatekeeper analogy, right? Like, they're keeping me out.
Yeah. Wow. And then I know it's so hard to be like, how do I get in the room?
Not like that. Not like that. That's definitely not the way to do it. But it is literally what you've just physically done, I guess, right? It's counterintuitive, but it's sort of like the just let go, release, and just do whatever you do.
Your audience can't see my can't see my hand motion.
Your jazz hands. Yeah, there were jazz hands there. It was glorious. I'm mindful of time. I will sort of bring it to wrap it up with a few closing questions. But before I get to them, I had one that I was quite intrigued by, sort of tying into the big DC superhero movies that you've worked on. I don't really care about talking about specifics of, you know, particular ones. What I'm intrigued about is the process, because I know when I've gone for big stuff like that, you're NDA'd out of your ass. And we don't even normally get like the sides a lot of times. A lot of them is you go in, you get an idea of the scene, and then it's like improv maybe or different setups. That's very different. And I get why it's done. But what kind of advice or tips can you give to actors in those quite unique situations where they're coming in, they don't even know what the project is, they don't know what the character is really, and they're just given a bit of an ethereal idea. Mm-hmm. How did you approach that when you were running those kinds of sessions, and what tips can you give?
Yeah, and obviously take what I say with a grain of salt, but in my experience, there was a lot of NDAs and there was a lot of fake sides. So oftentimes, you know, and again, for huge leads, you know, to play not only a superhero in, you know, the untitled Warner Brothers project, you were coming in for, you know, unbeknownst to you, possibly there was going to be sequels and spinoffs, and, you know, so it was, you know, a pretty big deal in that sense. And I mean, you know, here's the thing, if you had a good agent, you probably did know what you were coming in for. But on the breakdown, it was just like female number one in the untitled Warner Brothers. So you had no idea that was Wonder Woman, you know. We would maybe give you hints in the room, if we could. We had to be careful about what was said, but we would, you know, we would try to elaborate on what we were looking for in person. But the reality was, yeah, you were reading a scene from another movie that was probably you could have been reading like a Tarantino scene from a movie 10 years ago. And again, you're thinking, how is this relevant? But I promise you, there was a thought process behind it of this is the, because, and sometimes, granted, the scripts were usually literally under lock and key, like in a safe somewhere. I couldn't even read them half the time. But there was, sometimes it wasn't even written, you know, sometimes sure. It was like a small role in this one movie that would lead to a huge role in the next movie. But so again, sometimes there wasn't even sides to prepare, even if we could have done that. And so the reality was, when you're getting these fake sides for this, you know, God knows what movie, the key was, again, I've said this so many times today, and your audience is probably sick of me saying this, but like, it really was just to make it your own. You know, if you, again, hypothetically, if you get what could seemingly be some random Tarantino thing, you know, we're not looking for that performance of, you know, what that actress did in that movie. It was more, there was notes of things we were looking for. you know, there was like this, again, like an essence, a vibe mm-hmm. of the character. And so the, all you can do in those situations is make it your own. And again, do your homework. No, like you can say, okay, I'm coming in for this director. You know, so if you know, excuse me, that you're reading for, again, like a Zack Snyder or someone like that, you're familiar with his other work. So, you know, you can, there are things you can do to be prepared and do your homework. And, you know, even look at the casting director's body of work, and you can kind of say, okay, they probably, this seems to be their aesthetic and what they respond to. But then again, just coming in and making it your own. I know sometimes this isn't superhero specifically, but on, I was never point on Westworld or anything like that when I worked for Papsdera, but I'm remembering, you know, people had seen the show and they'd come in thinking every role was a host. And so they'd come in, you know.
Oh, amazing.
Being like a robot.
Like, and we were animatronic. Like, wow.
And here's, and we'd be like, no, just like.
And even in the end, like some of those hosts were just, you thought they were humans at the beginning anyway. So, yeah.
And so, and again, I was not point on that. So that is, it's not even really my story to tell, but I think it's just a good example of what I said earlier of like, don't try to be what you think we want you to be. You know what I mean? Like, just like they were trying to guess, and it's sort of like, nope, just do the scene. You know, like sometimes again, less is more. Just find the beats. You know, it doesn't, don't overthink it and read too much into it. If there's something specific we're looking for, I promise we'll tell you, you know, what we're to the extent that we're allowed to tell you. But the, yeah, it really, it just comes down to
go with what's on the page, or if there's no even page, just if there's an improv thing, I guess just see what comes out. And if you give notes, go with trying to find that inside of you and bring that out there. What was it like for you as a process, just to finish off on that, in terms of you not having any sides or sometimes anything to work with, and just having to figure out, you know, well, how do I get this essence out of this person when I don't have as much to play with? Because that's very different to what you would normally do. How did you approach those kinds of sessions?
Yeah, and I think that's where, look, I would love to, I like to think that I'm good at my job, but it is, it's not, obviously it comes down to taste and things like that, but it's not rocket science. Like when someone comes in and just, like there is, you can see the magic happen. Like it's, you know, it's undeniable. And again, it's.
Do you feel like sometimes you can sense that before they even perform, as in just in the room, or is that sort of occasional, but not as.
There are some actors that are very exciting that you never know what they're going to do. And it's, and again, sometimes it's the craziest thing, but it works. And, you know, and it's very, you know, I never want to name names. But there's some actors that, again, you bring them back over and over again, because again, you never, no matter what the project is, you know, it's going to be interesting. And again, they might not get the job every time, but it's going to be interesting. And so, and that's not to say that you need to come in, because I think a lot of times actors hear like, oh, I got to take risks, you know, and so they think they got to come in and do something big and crazy. And that, please, that's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But it, then there's a time and place for that. But no, it really is, again, just having that confidence that I think if you're constantly second guessing yourself and like, is this right? Chances are you're not fully committing to what you're doing, and then we can sense that. Whereas if you come in and you're like, I'm gonna go for it, like I'm gonna go for it, more often than not, those are the times that someone books the role. And you know, if they go a little too far, we can always, you know,
adjust a little and
get back in, or you know, this or that. But it, yeah, there are, like we were saying, with like this essence that we were looking for, because again, I know, again, I gotta be careful about what I say. Yeah. But the, you know, like when we were auditioning Wonder Woman, there was an element of, we knew that there needed to be sort of a love interest type situation with Batman. And so, and there, we needed, you know, someone who was, again, who was tough and could kick some ass, and, you know, they wanted it to be very international. And so, again, those things alone, like, you really, again, once people started to come in and, again, read these fake sides, you could see it come to life, you know. And to my old boss's credit, Laura Kennedy and Christy Carlson, Gal Gadot was one of the first people they thought of. Like, they brought her up, like, in my recollection, like, day one. And of course, there was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, sure, of people that were red. But they just had an instinct, because they were really good at their job. You know, I learned from the best. But it's, and again, we saw some amazing reads, but it's, again, it was the combination of, can this person be a warrior? So again, it's, we may not have had the script to go off.
You had your clues, you had your key things to go after, sure.
You can tell. Like, we can, you know, we can think outside the box.
Yeah, not trying to take credit away from you. We know you guys. We know you guys know your stuff. Now, that's super interesting, though. I always found that really curious with those kinds of roles, and what it would be like on your side to go through that process. But it's kind of not that much different, I guess, to any other role. It's just you don't have size.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'd be curious myself to hear, you know, Sarah Finn, or, you know, someone who does, you know, Marvel, like, they sure, probably have their own process and their own, like, I'm sure it's similar but different. And obviously the experiences I'm speaking to were years ago.
Sure.
But yeah, I think there is, it's a good actor is a good actor, a good audition is a good audition. You know, you can just, you can tell, and we can see it sort of come to life, whether it's the exact words they're saying or not.
Awesome. Amazing. All right, Kaylin, I like to wrap this up with 10 quick fire questions, which, like all good artists, have been stolen straight from inside the actor studio. So, whatever comes to mind, just, you know, your first kind of instinct, go with it for what your answer is. So the first question is, what is your favorite word?
Oh my God. I'm not going to get my favorite word.
Yeah.
Love.
Okay. What's your least favorite word?
Something negative.
As in the word negative, or just a negative word? You don't want to say it because it's a swear word.
I don't know if I can swear in your podcast.
You don't want to put stuff out there that's negative.
I've tried. It's fine. I think my brain is short circuiting.
I understand. I saw on your IG that you're a manifester, so I kind of understand where this might be coming from. We don't want to manifest anything that we don't want.
My least favorite word is no. I don't know.
Okay, whatever. Okay, next question is, what turns you on creatively?
Like, just a really inspiring, like, movie or TV show.
What turns you off? The converse of that.
Again, people with bad attitudes.
Next question is optional, which is, what is your favorite swear word? But if you're happy to swear like a trooper.
I say fuck. So, like, way more. Like, luckily I don't have a corporate job because I wouldn't last too long.
It's just a good interchangeable multi-usage word. I mean,
yeah, it really conveys
many things depending on the situation. Yeah. It's great. Yeah, perfect. What is your favorite noise?
The first thing that's coming to mind is, like, birds chirping in the morning, but that's not it. It's kind of, yeah. It's my favorite noise. I'm just thinking about cliches, like the ocean or I don't know. Sometimes just silence can be nice.
To be fair, that's actually a pretty good answer. Silence. No, like, no one said that before. Everyone always says, like, an actual sound, but you're right, like, sometimes silence
is soothing. Yeah,
you're good. What's your least favorite noise, or one you just don't like in general?
Probably, like,
birds chirping.
I'm looking at my fire alarm, and it's, I think, the, like,
oh, when, yeah,
that, not just the fire alarm itself, when it, like, if the batteries are low and just that beep beep beep, like, there's nothing will drive you crazy like that.
Are you like me where your instinct is you just want to go and smash it, even though I don't recommend we do that, but like,
yeah, there's that episode of Friends where like Phoebe's trying to
and she puts it down like the garbage dispenser, yeah, or something, and
he's coming back and it, like she can't get rid of it, so even if you try to destroy it, it just keeps beeping.
I love that Friends is so timeless that you brought up a reference from something that long ago and it's still very applicable. Great show. Okay, final few questions. What job or profession would you most like to attempt that you haven't done already?
Like the realistic answer is if, you know.
No, that's boring, Kaylin.
Like I've always like kind of wanted to be like a professor or something like that. Like I do love teaching, but no, the fun answer is like, I'm obsessed with like true crime. Okay. So, you know, being like a true crime, like podcaster or like documentarian, or even just like quitting everything and going and working for like the Innocence Project.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. See, that's way more interesting than no, like professors are great. Maybe you could have been like a professor in forensics who has a podcast in true crime on the side.
My best friend, who's a fellow casting director, again, the pandemic does crazy things to us, but she was, you know, also shares a love of, you know, true crime and would binge like things like, you know, Designated Survivor. And one day she just like accidentally signed up for like an MBA in criminology.
How do you accidentally sign up for an MBA?
If you should interview her. If you met her, you would understand. total tangent, but I think there is my secret passion and hobby.
Very cool. Very
not
cool.
Not secret, I guess.
No, but I think that's really cool and very sort of original and different and something different for you, I guess, to do just outside of this world too, which must be nice to have. What would you never want to do as a job?
Oh, like accounting, taxes.
Yeah. It's just, enough said. Thank you to all of them that do it. Much respect.
God bless there's someone that does it because it is so over my head and not my strength.
Yeah. Final question. Oh, it's a little bit more of an ethereal one, but it's when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be? What kind of legacy would you like to leave?
Oh, wow.
No pressure at the end.
No pressure. That's a great question. I think, well, again, I think it's twofold, and this is probably fresh in my mind because it's only been a couple of days since the Oscars, but in my lifetime, I would like to see casting directors be able to get an Oscar.
Get in there, hopefully.
You know, they finally stepped up. I think casting directors, you know, like all the other heads of departments, deserve one as well. And so in my lifetime, I would, not saying that, you know, look, obviously it'd be an honor to get one, but I would like to see casting directors in general, you know, like the Nina Golds of the world, like the people that deserve Oscars, like should be able to get them.
Sure.
So I'd love to see that. But then, and then for me, like, sure. Yes. I'd love to, you know, work on, you know, just some amazing things and leave a legacy, you know, in that sense. But yeah, on my Wikipedia bio, you know, I hope it says that I, you know, like, again, I love and I love, you know, my friends. And so I think at the end of the day, friends and family is the most important thing. And so just having like touched, you know, people in my life, I think at the end of the day is more important than the career. But I also do believe you can have it all.
I think you can have it all too. I think it's just not losing the perspective of one whilst you're trying to spend time on the other and finding the balance of how can you enjoy both simultaneously, as opposed to feeling like we have to, well, I'm going to leave that for 10 years and then just hopefully it's still there when I come back later, which doesn't always play out that way. Awesome. All right, Kaylin. Well, look, I guess final moment over to you. If there's anywhere people can connect with you on the socials, feel free to give it a plug. And then I guess, you know, to wrap it up, whatever you feel is the sort of main underlying theme or poignant thing you want to leave people with as a closing message, I'll kind of give the final few seconds to you here.
Thank you. Yeah, please, again, my I'm not an influencer in any way, but I do love connecting with actors. My Instagram is at cwellcasting. Honestly, that's probably better than emailing me because the emails tend to get lost. But if you know, it's sometimes easier if you just get like a quick DM from someone, and you can just do, it's so easy these days, just do a little like, a thank you. Mm-hmm. And then, you're an easy way to stay on my radar. So please feel free to follow me at cwellcasting. And I think the themes of what I said today seem to be, a little obvious in that I kept saying, make it your own, and, all those, again, classic cliche things. But having confidence, and, I do think normally I go on a spiel about networking being really important, and, that ties into the Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And forming those genuine connections, like we talked about that as well. And I think we have to all be in this we're all on the same team, like I said, and we're in this for the long haul, and it's not necessarily about getting the job tomorrow. Obviously that's the goal. But hopefully we're doing this, for our lifelong careers. And, if I can't cast you this year, hopefully I can cast you, in a couple years or 20 years. I hope we're all still doing this, so I think, just again, having that positive attitude, putting in the work, but also going out and enjoying life, and going to the beach, going skiing, living where you're happiest. I think like that sums up all the the points I talked about today.